Richard Dowling is back in Las Cruces performing tomorrow night at Temple Beth El, 3980 Sonoma Springs Road, in a free concert with the Piatigorsky Foundation with violinist Ching Lee. And it's my pleasure to welcome back Richard Dowling and welcome Ching Lee to our studios.
Hi, how are you? Pleasure meeting you.
Good to have you here.
Howdy, Leora.
Hi, Richard. I think this is our third, I don't know, fourth.
18 millionth time.
always great to have you here. So, Ching Lee, let's talk about your background. I read on the internet that you started playing at four, studying with your father.
Yes. He is a violinist. Now he's retired. He was still teaching, but he's over 80 years old. And he basically, before he even was married or had a child, he said he was going to have a violinist child. So that's how it worked.
Oh, so it was predestined.
Yes.
Yeah. You were going to be a violinist. And then you went to the Central Conservatory at 12.
Right.
And I know they have a rigorous program.
We haven't mentioned that she's from China yet.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Wait, which Central Conservatory?
I look like
the one in Kansas City, right?
Right. It's the Central Conservatory of Beijing, in Beijing, that, yes.
And sorry, you're absolutely right. I said Ching Lee, and I just was just assuming China.
Well, she's American now.
Right.
And you've been here for quite some time.
25 years, yeah.
And one of, I think the way you got here was that the great violinist Beryl Sanofsky heard you at Central Conservatory.
Exactly.
And brought you to study at Peabody with him.
That's right. He was in the mid-80s, he used to tour quite a bit in Beijing and Shanghai. And that's where he went to the Central Conservatory in Beijing to teach master class, giving recitals. And I was one of the kids, I was like 16 or something, that was selected to have master class with him. That's how it happened. When I graduated from the high school division of the academy, the Central Conservatory, so I sent my application, my recordings, he remembered me, so he basically rescued me from China.
So
1987.
I'm curious to know, did your father know Beryl Sanofsky?
Oh, yes.
Were they colleagues?
Yes, they were good friends and colleagues. And
the same generation,
they
right?
were the same generation,
yeah.
Really. That's right.
Right.
So absolutely, we heard stories about him, and they were good friends.
Yeah.
So, yes, 1987, before Tiananmen Square, rescued from China. Nevertheless, you left your family. So what was...
You know, at that age, I was 19. I didn't know better.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought, you know, I'm going to go to America. That's like the dreamland. And study with one of the, you know, best respected teachers. So
mm-hmm.
that was great.
Okay. Well, and many, many of Chinese students are coming here now and filling the conservatories. We see them in all the
That's
conservatories.
Right.
So, but you made it sound like a very positive thing, but there must have been some...
Oh, yeah, I miss my parents,
miss
the food, and I didn't speak a word of English.
Come on. We go to every Chinese buffet on this Piatigorsky Foundation tour.
In New Mexico. It was lovely. But, yeah, I mean, the hardest thing for me was to adjust to the culture. At the age of 19, left my parents. But, you know, in the end, why not?
Yeah, well, and you've been able to have a career here. And you didn't know a word of English, you were telling me
mm-hmm.
before we started the interview.
That's right. And that was the hardest problem to adjust. Also, the other thing is, I remember I came to, flew to JFK, had taken the train to Baltimore in the middle of nowhere. To me, I didn't even know how to pronounce Baltimore. and some international counselor picked me up from the train station. I came into the dorm, Peabody dormitory. Nobody was there at the end of August.
Mm.
And then he said something about Beryl Sanofsky, you know. So 2 weeks later, I saw him in the courtyard. That was the person that, you know, to me is family, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, of course. You must have been very close with him. And then later you went to study with Joseph Gingold. One
yes.
of the other great violin teachers at Indiana.
Right. So I studied with him for like 1 year, like right after I finished Peabody with Beryl. And for graduate school. But
uh-huh.
then he got pretty ill. So I quit, you know, going there. Basically, I lived in Baltimore and flew there to only have lessons.
Oh, gosh.
Every month, yeah.
And you've been in Baltimore. I know you play with the Baltimore Symphony.
Yeah, I'm that old. I've been with the symphony for 20th season this season.
Wow.
I mean, it's hard to believe, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And also, like all musicians, you're an orchestral musician, you do chamber music, and then you get to do some of
tours
these,
with Piatigorsky
these
Foundation.
Tours. So we've had a number of Piatigorsky musicians come through New Mexico in the last few years, especially thanks to Susan Fitzgerald, who really was the link for us when she came here from Alaska. So what's that like for you? Why don't you jump in, Richard, and just in case people are listening who don't know anything about the Piatigorsky Foundation, just give the little background, and then I'd like to hear Ching.
Well, Ching joined the foundation at the invitation of cellist Evan Drachman, who is the founder and president of the Piatigorsky Foundation. Just as a refresher, Evan Drachman is one of the maternal grandsons of the great Russian-Ukrainian cellist Gregor Piatigorsky. And Evan lives in Baltimore now for the last several years with his wife and two little boys, and of course has gotten to know Ching. And we've performed together as a trio and enjoyed one another's company. So a couple of years ago, he asked Ching if she'd like to join the roster of the foundation, and voila, here we are.
And the Piatigorsky Foundation specializes in sending musicians to remote areas and on non-conventional venues. So this is your second time through New Mexico this academic year, but I know you were in Hobbs and Carrizozo and where else in the last week?
Let's put it this way. Ching's first tour, she asked me to accompany her, was in Wyoming, and we got to see all of the beautiful state of Wyoming.
So gorgeous.
This tour, we've been in southeast New Mexico, full of oil wells and a lot of sand. we played in Jowl, Eunice, Tatum, Hobbs,
Lovington.
Boy, we've hit all the big spots in New Mexico this time, you know. But now we're back in civilization in Las Cruces.
Right,
and great to have you here. So, Ching, tell us what your impressions are of getting to go to these sort of remote parts of the United States and perform.
Well, that's something new for me because, you know, generally speaking, working with Baltimore Symphony for 20 years, if we have a tour, we travel to the major cities in Europe and U.S. or Asia, big concert halls. And doing this, I told the audience yesterday, this is surely just for love because it's great repertoire and have wonderful pianists. And it's like making chamber music as well in the same time. And also, in some ways that we're kind of keeping this classical music alive, right?
Right.
And it's sort of dying arts in some ways.
One thing she's remarked many times on this particular tour is just how friendly the people were that we've encountered in southeast New Mexico. Because you've spent most of your life in big cities, in Baltimore, New York, you know, and
Beijing,
sort of sequestered,
Beijing,
you know, with the orchestra hitting all the big time.
Right.
And then you get to see what real America's like going out
Middle
to the hinterlands,
America.
You know. And you know, people are just different in small towns. They come and that's part of what makes the Piatigorsky Foundation so special and why I've been with it. This is now my 20th year. I started with Evan in February 1994. Mm. So it's been exactly a year, 20 years, two decades. And what keeps me coming back is that the audiences are so genuinely appreciative. In big cities, you know, are so well served by classical music. People, you know, are running for the exit before the last note dies. And here they're running down to the front to shake your hand and, you know, think that some of the magic's going to rub off on them if they get to touch you, you know. That's very gratifying for a musician. We've worked so hard, and to have people who are genuinely enthusiastic and appreciative really warms your heart. Mm-hmm. So it's a reciprocal affair. They get a lot of really great music played by great players, and we get, you know, our egos stroked a little bit.
Yeah,
you know?
It's very rewarding to see, like, some 13-year-old wants to study violin, and now they're, you know, inspired to. Yeah.
Just last night, a single father brought his daughter to the concert. They had just moved to Lovington from out of state, and, you know, they needed to find a teacher. So Ching was able to introduce him and her to the local music teachers there who were in attendance at the concert. So that's what it's all about with the foundation, is making those kinds of connections.
Yeah, it sounds very, very gratifying when those things happen. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the music that you'll be playing.
So we're going to start with Mozart sonatas, and then a Debussy violin piano sonata. What else? Saint-Saëns Rondo Capriccioso.
And as I always tell the audience, once we get to the Saint-Saëns introduction of Rondo Capriccioso, I always ask them if they've brought seatbelts. Because when Ching, after the introduction, once it takes off, it's like a horse race all the way to the end. It's the greatest Bugs Bunny Roadrunner music ever composed.
Yes, yeah. And everybody's breathless.
Exactly.
Just listening to
including
it.
Me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the piece. It's a great piece. I mean, but, you know, when you listen to what Heifetz is recording, all this great orchestra, you know, this is exciting piece.
Yeah, it is. It's wonderful. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Ching Lee's interpretation is pretty darn good, too.
Oh, thank you. You're biased. That's okay. I'll take it.
That's good. And I know that one of the things about the Piatigorsky concerts is that you talk about the music and you relate to the audience verbally as well as musically so that people can come in and learn so much.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I have to say, Richard is one of the best lecture person I've ever seen. He's so engaging with the audience.
Well, I learned that from Evan Drachman. Evan is the original. He really knows how to charm an audience.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it is charming, and it's also heartwarming because you just come out of the concert feeling wonderful because you've heard great music and you just feel like you've learned all sorts of new wonderful things.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit more about Burl Sanofsky, your teacher. I just wonder, you came and you studied with him and you were with him, studying with him for a number of years. If you have a story, particularly inspirational story that from your time studying with him.
Wow, there are too many stories. Oh, gosh, just, well, Burl, he, first of all, when I first studied with him, because I didn't speak the language, so there was not much talking, but mostly just his playing. He just mostly showed it on his instrument. Those are very memorable things. I mean, you can learn a lot just mimicking and imitating. And then my memorable things mostly are silly things, like in the middle of lesson, he goes, "Are you hungry?" You know, everybody knows that Burl loves food. So then he'll give me some money.
He was a big man.
He was, he was a large man. Yeah.
He loves anything that's pleasurable in life, you know, music and food and everything. So he'll give me like some money and says, go there and get some nice sandwich. So we'll be chowing down some sandwich. And then after that, you wash your hand. Let's keep playing. And so that's kind of a lesson that, you know.
Nice to have the human touch. So there was an article this week in the New York Times that has been sent to me by several friends around the country, where they did this test of violinists with the old violins versus the new violins, and you know they had Guarneri and Stradivarius, and then they had some of the new ones. And I was interested to hear your take on this. The upshot of the study, and the violinists had to have these welder's goggles on so they couldn't tell what violin they were playing, and it was 10, you know, very well-known and fine violinists, and some of them chose the modern instruments, but none of them would repudiate their wonderful older violins, and I know you play a Galliano, which is a wonderful violin, so I'm just curious what you thought about the study.
Sense my position. I mean, because I haven't personally experimented too much of modern instruments, so I really cannot say, but my love is, you know, the old instrument, old Italian instrument especially, because of their purity in their tone, you know, the warmth and the colors and nuances. So I don't know if, and also it's a piece of art itself.
Yeah. That has survived.
Her violin is really beautiful. It's in first class condition considering it's 278 years old and doesn't look a day over 123.
Yeah, I mean, even though it's still poor man's Strat, as we say in the business, you know.
Yeah. But Galliano, was her beautiful violin.
Yeah, it's very soprano, kind of a brilliant kind of, you know, instrument.
Come a little bit closer.
Yeah,
there.
Galliano was a student of Stradivarius.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing that many people don't realize is you have the violin, then you also have to have a great bow.
Yeah.
And then there's also a very personal decision just with things like strings, because strings have different sounds. So
I know.
Yeah.
I mean the thing is about bow, I was thinking the best analogy to a layperson is that violin to me it's more like the person. Like that's my voice, Ching's voice. And when it comes to bow, it's different language you're speaking. If you have a French bow, you're playing a French piece of music. Uh-huh. You know, it comes to that textural and creaminess. And then if you're playing a German piece or different pieces, then you use German bow. You know, it depends on when you play concerto, you use something really substantial, yeah. Right? You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's just different character varieties, I would say. Yeah.
Thank you so much, both of you, for stopping in, whisking in as on your way in from Hobbs. My guests are Ching Lee, violinist, and Richard Dowling, pianist. They'll be performing tomorrow night at 7:30 at Temple Bethel, 3980 Sonoma Springs. It's a free concert. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you. It's been an honor.